Welcome to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly. This podcast is presented in the context of our Sunday morning service. We hope you enjoy this presentation.
Good morning. How are you today? Good to see you. So much taller than my normal crowd. Oh, boy. That's awesome. I'm not nervous, probably. So do you guys have your cups that you were given when you came in today? Just hold on to those. I just wanted you to have that, from me to you. We're not doing communion, though. That's kind of misleading there. So I don't know if you guys are familiar with this book, Nuffle Bunny. How many of you guys have read Nuffle Bunny? Maybe you say Knuffle. I don't know. It's an ongoing saga. What is it? Knuffle, Nuffle, Knuffle. Anyway, I like this one. All of our kids have liked this one. And I especially like the part of the story when Trixie throws a fit because her bunny is left at the laundromat. Here she says, "Aggle, flaggle, clabble," said Trixie again. "Now please don't get fussy," said her daddy. Well, she had no choice. She bawled. Wah! She went boneless. The next one. She did everything she could to show how unhappy she was. And by the time they got home, her daddy was unhappy too. This is classic toddler behavior, isn't it? If you guys have never experienced this, come over to my house at any given time. Somebody's probably doing it. I'm not going to lie to you there. It doesn't really matter what has happened. I mean, if the bunny was left at the laundromat, maybe I could see that. But how they have the physical strength to go from boneless to stick straight and arched back, I don't know. I don't even know how that's possible. I'd be worn out, but they do it like in a millisecond. And you're trying to, anyway. It's not easy, you know what I'm saying? But it's a fit. They throw a fit. And, you know, and it doesn't even have to be a big deal what has happened. You might not have the juice they want. You have juice, but not the juice they wanted. You might not be wearing the right sweater. That one's a big one at our house. It might not be the right cup. If you give this cup to Justin, he will pitch a living fit because this is Kristen's cup. It cannot happen. He will yell, "There's another cup I wanted." He doesn't talk that great yet, but you get the idea because it's... And I mean, I don't want to give toddlers a bad rap because I'm going to be honest with you for a second. I've seen older kids pitch a fit. I've seen teenagers pitch fits. In fact, I've even seen adults pitch fits. No, I haven't seen them laying on the floor in Walmart, but you get what I'm saying. There's fits that are thrown. There's fits that are pitched. My mom's a school teacher, and she has this little ball of yarn, and if her kids are pitching a fit, she gives it to them because that's the fit that they can pitch. And I think we're pretty excellent at portraying our unhappiness with not getting our way. This is not the cup I wanted! This is not how I wanted it to go. And I don't know if it's in our DNA. I don't have any medical evidence of this. But I think inherently we as humans tend to want what we want no matter what, right? Some of you are feeling hangry right now and kind of wanting to throw a fit, aren't you? Yeah, I know. But as I tell my kid like 24 times a day, you get what you get and you don't pitch a fit. And you know what? That's true. No matter what age you are, no matter where you are in life, even Lola at 90 years old, she needs to know that sometimes we don't get what we want. And we can't pitch a fit and say, "This is not the cup I wanted." We could, but nobody's going to listen. So many times we want only good things to happen to us, don't we? How many of you can agree with that? I want a pain-free life. I want a heartache-free life. Help me, I want a student loan free life. I want a bill free life. I want easy more than anything else. The Staples button, that's the one I want. But I want to ask a question this morning, and it's, I don't know how popular I'll be after this, but nonetheless, what if your pain-free life is not what God wants for you? God's so quiet. What if you're not suffering through a trial because we live in a fallen world? What if the trial that you're currently facing is exactly what God had planned? I'm not talking about catastrophic loss or unspeakable evil. Don't get me wrong here. That's a result of a fallen world. That's not God's doing. But as my friend Scotty Gibbons says, whatever you're going through, at best, God is orchestrating it, and at worst, he's allowing it. So here we find ourselves faced with the question, God's got me then, right? If he's able to make all things work out for my good, then that's good, that's bad, that's indifferent, that's all things. What if the thing you've been chafing against, this lot in life you've been stuck with, this bad hand that you've been dealt, this thorn in your side, what if it's all part of the intricate tapestry that God is weaving in your life? Before you think I'm a complete sadist, let me give you an illustration by means of a story. Jesus was heading out to the Garden of Gethsemane to pray. And it was right after the Seder meal. It was right after the Last Supper he had had with the disciples. And Judas had already left. He was up to no good. Everybody knew it. And I believe that Jesus knew what was going to happen to him. I mean, he had been planning it since the beginning of the time, and I imagine he was fully aware of the physical agony that he was going to suffer in the next couple of days. He knew about the stripes. He knew about the crown. He knew about the spear. He knew about everything that was going to happen to him over our Easter weekend, right? But his love for you and me was so strong, was so deep, was so pronounced that not even the pain of the cross could dissuade him from that mission. Before he went there, though, he went to the garden to pray with his friends. And that wasn't unusual. They did that. But it was about 11:30 at night after a huge Seder meal. Before you give the disciples a bad time for falling asleep, they had just eaten a huge, I don't think there was turkey involved, but they were tired, okay? So here they are in the garden, and he said, pray with me for an hour, and you know the story, they fell asleep. But I can only imagine that the disciples were feeling the stress of the moment. All three of the synoptic gospels tell about this story. All three of them recount the prayer that he prayed. Even John mentions it. So it's got to be in their mind something big, right? If they all wrote it down, this was like a big deal. In Luke 22:42, it says, Father, if you are willing, please take this cup of suffering away from me. Yet I want your will to be done, not mine. So here's Jesus in the garden. He knows what he's facing. He sees the cross. He's still God, so he's retaining his omniscience. He knows what's going to happen. But his humanness is starting to come through. I love the picture here in the garden, and I love this prayer that Jesus prayed because it's such a great picture of the Trinity. God the Son is crying out to God the Father. He sends his angel to minister to him. And I don't think the cup that Christ was talking about here was a physical thing. I think in all aspects of the prayer of desperation he was praying at that moment, he understood separation that was going to take place. I don't know what that's like, but here in the face of bearing the weight of sin. He had never known sin before. Hearing the weight of bearing the sorrow and the pain. He had never known that before. Here he was going into a situation that was going to be agony. And here in that, he very, very humanly cried out, "Can we do this different?" He knew that he was going to be in such a sinful state that his father was going to turn his face from him. He knew he was going to be alone. He knew for the first time in eternity he wasn't going to experience that harmony, that joy, that love that the Trinity knows of. He knew for just that portion of that weekend he was going to miss out on that. And I don't know if your theology can handle this morning, but in a very loving and respectful way, Jesus said, "This is not the cup I wanted." Yet wrapped the whole thing, the whole night, up with "not my will, but yours be done." You know the rest of the story. It was absolutely God's will that his son suffer this unspeakable sacrifice. That there was separation there, that there was a moment on the cross where he cried out to his father. And Jesus was willing to do that because he loved you so much. He was willing to take up this cup of suffering because he knew God's glory, God's mission was more important than his goodness, his ideal, his cup that he wanted. He knew that this horrible death was absolutely the fulfillment of God's rescue plan for us. And he was willing to go headlong into it. So I ask you again this morning, what if the perfect plan that you have planned for your life isn't God's plan? Do you trust him enough to allow his plan to be worked out in you? John 18:11 tells of Jesus' ultimate answer to this cup conundrum. He says, Jesus commanded Peter, "Put your sword away. Shall I not drink the cup the Father has given me?" Resolutely, he put the guy's ear back on and said, "Enough of this, let's go forward. We're doing this thing tonight." He knew what it was, but he took it up anyway. He was resolute in his obedience. He trusted his dad. And now that God had said, "This is the way," Jesus was going full force into the harm he knew was coming. You see, Jesus' attitude towards fulfilling God's plan is so amazing to me. I don't know if I would have wanted to do it. Given the option, I would have said, "Please, let this cup pass me." But I think this, in an effort to be Christ-like, that's what we're supposed to be doing, right? Trying to be Christ-like, we have to take this attitude on as well. In my children's pastor approach to life, I've put my thoughts into an acrostic this morning of cup. And I want to look at three attitudes that Christ had that we need to adopt so that we can fulfill God's plan for our life. And the first one is, we have to concede our ideal. I'm not sure where the idea came from that a Christian's life had to be roses. I'm fairly certain that that's an American dream that crept into the church. Because I'm pretty sure that's not what the Bible says. Paul says, "Rejoice in that thorn in your side. Be content in all things." James says, "Count it pure joy whenever you face trials of many kinds." Jesus said, "In this life you will have troubles." And just to get a little real here, are you ready? Pinterested, Photoshop, Instagram-filtered, blog-worthy lives are not real.
whoa.
These are things that people have told us we should look for that isn't truth. Carrie Clarensaw was the women's ministry director for the Assemblies of God. She said, she was speaking at a pastor's retreat we went to last year, and she said something that was so profound that you know how you hear some things and it just makes you kind of go, I need to rethink my whole life. And that's kind of where I was with this. She said, don't make an idol out of the ideal. I'm going to say that again, which is preacher speak for write that down because it's a good one. Don't make an idol out of your ideal. Our American dream, our American ideal, has many of us trapped in a prison of our own making. We are living in a padded cell of, I need this, I want that, I have to have that. That's not the cup I wanted. I deserve that. My kids need a better this. I hate to break this news, but if millennials act entitled, it's because they saw it modeled from the rest of us. I don't mean to step on toes today. That's not my purpose. I don't preach often. It'll be fine next week. Okay. But how many of us look at our lives and have content on the tip of our tongue? Our ideal is not just about material things. Let's get real. My job isn't what I wanted. My boss doesn't treat me with the respect I deserve. My life isn't turning out like I wanted it to have. This is not the cup I wanted. So many of us have that mindset going all the time. All of a sudden, we're comparing situations and circumstances and bowing to an idol of ideal. Please understand that I am not talking about desperation, poverty, violence in your home. Get out of that. That's not what I'm talking about here. But what I am talking about is the life of a Christ-following, God-knowing, Bible-toting Christian is sometimes not roses. Countless times we read in the Bible about folks who are in terrible predicaments, don't we? Miserable things happen to them. And they're not written about to be pitied. On the contrary, they're put up as role models to be envied for their cause of Christ that they suffered for. Abraham and Sarah, childless for so long, but blessed in God's timing. Job getting pummeled because God said he could handle it. Thank you very much. Poor Job. The prophets were in all kinds of messes. Daniel was in a lion's den. Jeremiah was in a cistern. Hosea. The kids are in here, so I'm not going into that, but read that. That's not good. Paul was in a shipwreck. Disciples were hung upside down on crosses. There were things. Jesus hung on a cross. The point is, they all conceded their ideal. And they took up the cup that God had planned for them. What is God calling you to do this morning? What has he been calling you to do over the last couple of months that you've been avoiding? Is he calling you to the mission field? We've got a New York missions trip coming up really soon. Go see Pastor Josh after service. Is he calling you to give up your Tuesdays and go help Barb at the food pantry? Is he calling you to foster care? Is it outside your ideal? Does it make you uncomfortable? Does it matter? No. Because if God is calling you to it, if God wants you to do it, let's put down the idol of the ideal and take up the cup that God has laid out for us. Let's say, not my will, but thine be done. It's getting so quiet in here. Ooh, Jesus, help us. I promise, Pastor is so much nicer. After we concede our ideal, the next attitude we should have is unpack the privilege. Now that I have you feeling completely disgusted about life, let me just give you a little hope, okay? You, maybe God's cup, maybe the one he has for you isn't what you had planned, but can we talk about this for a minute? The God of the universe, okay, the God who made everything, the God who is the ultimate end of all things, he came up with a plan for you. Finite dust that you are, he said, Preston, I have something for you. Sorry, Preston, I just saw you there. He took time to create you and weave you into the fabric of history, his story. He took time to do that for you. What a privilege. What an honor. Whatever he has planned, no matter what it looks like, no matter how small or how gross or how many times they poop on you, sorry, it is God who came up with that plan for your life. That he trusts me enough to give me that cup? Wow. All I can say is thank you. And try my level best to run the race, to finish, to perform the task, to achieve the goal in a manner worthy of such a trust. To hear, well done, my good and faithful servant. What more could I ask out of this life? I think of the apostles, I think of Paul, I think of the kings, I think of the prophets. What amazing things they were able to do because they took up that cup. But you know, I also think of the widow and her two mites. I think of the boy and his lunch. I think of the tenth of the lepers, seemingly small figures in our Bible, but offered life-altering lessons with their cup-drinking lives. Whatever it is that God has for you, big, small, glamorous, not so much, history-changing, mundane, whatever it is, let's be careful to unpack that privilege of following God's will and be grateful in our attempt to see our life glorify his. Psalm 139, 14 through 17 says, I praise you because I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Your works are wonderful, I know that full well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was made in the secret place. When I was woven together in the depths of the earth, your eyes saw my unformed body. All the days ordained for me were written in your book before one of them came to be. How precious to me are your thoughts, God. How vast is the sum of them. God knew you. He formed you. He wrote your days down. This shouldn't feel like a death sentence. This shouldn't feel like the cup you don't want. This should feel like freedom. He sees. He cares. He has a plan for your life. You are not an accident. See what rich ideal there is in that. Drink that cup that he has set before you and trust him for the privilege of seeing it fulfilled. Last. The final attitude that we need to have is pursue his expertise. Let's think further about who we are deigning to let lead our life, shall we? This God who merely put the universe in order, you know, no big deal, did it in a weekday, hung the stars, created beautiful sunrises, breathtaking landscape, awe-inspiring vistas. This is the guy, has a cup designed especially for you. Here's the guy that created quantum physics, who knows the answer to P versus NP. He even understands women. That's right. I'm just saying, he's the man. This is the God that wants you to try his plan instead of yours. Why not trust him? Why not allow it? Just for grins, why not let the omniscient of the pair of you make the call? Isaiah 26, 3 through 4 says, "You will keep in perfect peace all who trust in you, all whose thoughts are fixed on you. Trust in the Lord always, for the Lord God is the eternal rock." You see, the main problem, I think, and this is just my opinion, of not wanting to follow God's will for our lives, for pitching a fit over the cup we get, is that we don't trust him. When our ideal is compromised, when life hands us lemons, we falter in our trust of God. We feel that somehow the circumstance has thrown God for a loop. He didn't see this one coming, I guarantee it. The cup you've been handed isn't right. It's not the one I wanted. It's not easy. It's not cake. Obviously, God has messed up somewhere. My prayer for all of us this morning, and myself so included in this, is that we learn to trust him regardless. I mean, really, work with me right now. At what point in your unbelievable circumstances does God's expertise fail? When does he become untrustworthy? Oh, I lost my job. Does that mean he's no longer the provider? Oh, you don't understand, Ange. My marriage is suffering. Does that make him less the healer of the brokenhearted? Oh, but you don't understand, Ange. My kid is really sick. Does that make his stripes obsolete? At what point in your life do you say, I can't trust him? Does the enormity of your circumstance make God less trustworthy? Hi, worship team. Everybody's looking at you, not me. The answer is no. The truth of the matter is, no matter what happens, God is still good. He is still loving. He is still kind. He is still the one that's going to bring you through this if you let him. And the glory of it all is, if you do, his glory will shine through you. The only thing that shifts in our life is our trust of him. He is the same yesterday, today, and forever. Pursue his expertise. Regardless of what your human eyes see, regardless of government, regardless of world struggle, regardless of what is happening in your neck of the woods, regardless of all of that, pursue his expertise. Find his perfect peace, as Isaiah said, as you set your mind on him and drink from the cup he gave you. I know this is tough. I told Barb I didn't even want to preach it. Not getting the cup you wanted is tough. Fits are bound to be thrown. You may even go boneless. It could happen. But as we pick ourselves up and put on our big girl pants, can we do it with a better attitude? Can we concede our ideal world? Can we unpack the privilege of fulfilling God's perfect plan? Can we pursue his expertise and trust him always? The challenge I leave with you, and I challenge myself with this, is drink the cup. Soak it in. Be present. Be right here where God has you. Don't wish away what is happening for what may or may not ever come. Some things are too hard for us to handle. I get that. But if at all possible, can we be present? I don't want to be so focused on what I wish was going to happen, what could possibly happen in the future, that I miss what God is doing in and through me right now. I want to come to the point in my life where I'm not longing for, I'm not hoping for, but I'm living in it. Let me just real quick. I feel like I need an explanation for this. This is coming from a place of real today, if you can handle it. I have faced infertility for the last 10 years. We haven't been able to have another kid after Brett. It's hard. I'm not going to lie to you. The procedures are painful. The surgeries stink. There were so many times when another miscarriage would happen that I would think, God, let this cup go. Give it to somebody else, would you? Because I'm done. Sorry, I'm a girl. I cry. When I gave back one more foster kid that I didn't want to, I would say, Jesus, please. What's with this? But you know, the point is that I have pitched my fit. I have said, this is not the cup I wanted. And God, not so lovingly, said, but this is where I want you. And you know what? I'm right where he wants me to be. I am able to empathize with women who walk in my shoes. I understand grief and loss in a way that I never could before. I am honored that God has allowed me to have a glimpse into his character and who he is in a way that I didn't know before. In a way that I couldn't have understood. I wouldn't have got it. But here I am on this journey. And 10 years later, I can say, thank you for this cup that you gave me. Is it what I had planned? No, 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 no. Was it my ideal? Not even close. But here I am walking with God, and he's working his plan through me, and I'm right here at this moment in Casper, Wyoming in 2017, able to share this message with you because God brought me here. I don't want my ideal. I'll let him have his. I want to continue to know the privilege of following him always. And I want to trust his expertise with my whole life. I want to get to the point in my life where I don't pitch a fit over the circumstance I'm in, but I trust his no as much as I trust his yes. I trust his closed door as much as I welcome his open one. That's where I want to be.
You have been listening to the podcast of Casper Faith Assembly in Casper, Wyoming. For more information, please email us casperfaith@gmail.com or call us at 307 865-9121. We hope you've enjoyed this presentation of Casper Faith Assembly, where relationships matter most.